He do. Jim cocks his head at me, looking for all the world like a rangy bird.
It'll be better for all of you if he goes to prison. One less thing for your mama to worry about. He's only gonna bring her pain. But at least if he's in jail, he can do it on someone else's dime.
But he didn't kill you, I snarl. He's innocent.
Ain't nobody innocent, Shady. Least of all your brother. Sometimes the judgment that falls on us ain't for the crime we did, but it's owed us all the same.
What's that supposed to mean? Jim rubs the back of his head.
I didn't deserve that particular hammer that bashed in my brains, but I ducked plenty of ones before it. And there was gonna be another hammer. Sometime, someday. So why not this one?
He smiles, showing a flash of tobacco-stained teeth. Just tell me who did it. Stop talking riddles and tell me who killed you. He'd never protect Jesse like this, and wouldn't care about my feelings if Jesse were the murderer. There's only one person he'd protect so fiercely. Kenneth. Jim's voice draws my attention back to him.
I got myself killed, girl. Like we all do. Everybody wants to be a victim. But even if we're victims, we're the executioners, too. I've been putting the knots in my own hanging rope for a long, long while.
That sounds like something someone else said to me recently. But who? What did you do? I ask, my curiosity pushing the thought from my mind.
You want me to confess my sins?
He says wryly.
Fine. I lied to you at the hospital that night. Your mama and I were together before your daddy died.
You what? I should have known. But I guess I didn't want to. Jesse was right. And Mama and Jim both lied to me. I shake my head. I don't know what Mama ever saw in you.
She saw somebody who'd pay mind to her instead of that goddamn fiddle in your hands.
He nods at Cedar.
You remember that boy? If you're starting up with this one here. She's her daddy all the way through.
Jim laughs bitterly. Now put that fiddle down and go home and leave me to my afterlife. Not until you tell me, I say, gritting my teeth. I need to know who killed you. My arms are aching from holding up the fiddle, and the music's starting to sound shaky and shrill. Sweat beads at my temples. I don't know how much longer I can keep this up. But Cedar's thigh moves to touch my knee, making me feel a little more anchored to this realm. Jim squats down until he's nose to nose with me, his eyes boring into mine. I resist the impulse to cringe away.
I'm dead, and it's Jesse's fault. And there ain't nothing you can do about that. I don't know where in God's name you got that magic fiddle. But you better put it back where you found it and leave dead men be.
Are you really going to do this to Daddy's, to your best friend's family? Another question creeps into my head like a dark fog. And before I can think, it's out of my mouth. Or were you glad Daddy died so you could have Mama? I'm as surprised by the question as Jim is. But I keep my gaze fixed on him, an anger that doesn't even feel like mine radiating from me. Jim looks rattled for the first time. glad he died. Me? He leaps to his feet, looming over us, seeming bigger and darker than he ever was in life. You want to talk about William dying, you go see your brother. Now drop that goddamned fiddle and leave me be. He roars, lunging for my instrument. Cedar throws himself in front of me, knocking the bow from my hand and bringing Omi Wise to a sudden end, cracking our connection right down the middle. Jim reels back, but Cedar kneels between us, his arms spread out to protect me. Jim looks at me as if from the other side of an abyss, all impotent rage. And then he's gone. And there's just the moonlight pouring through the window. Why'd you do that? I yell. He was coming after you, I thought. I just acted. I'm sorry. Let's get out of here, please, Cedar says, his eyes wide with fear. I start to stand, but then a cold, strong hand grips my wrist, and an eerily familiar voice rasps.
Pick up your fiddle. Play me a tune.
When I don't move, the hand tightens its grip, each finger pressing a bruise into my skin.
Now.
I turn and see darkness in the shape of a man, a festering blackness without a face. This is what crawled out of the crack I made when my music stopped. A monster climbing out of a rent between worlds. I think it was his anger I felt before. His voice whispering that question about Jim being glad of Daddy's death. But now the monster isn't just in my head. I open my mouth to scream, but no sound comes out.
Shady,
Cedar says, backing away toward the door.
Shady, let's go. Come on, let's go.
But I can't. I know what comes next. I know it with the dreadful certainty that usually only comes in dreams. In nightmares. I didn't know he could find me here, in the waking world. It's the Shadow Man who haunts my sleeping hours. He visited me in the hospital, the night Jesse beat up Kenneth. He stopped up my throat with his darkness, and it was his darkness I fell into after raising Sarah's mom. But this is different. Somehow, Daddy's fiddle has given him shape, form, power. Instead of being paralyzed, my body is in his control. My limbs moving against my own will. I keep telling myself to move, to fight, to run, but nothing happens. My throat closes up as I retrieve my fiddle from the floor. Will the music make him stronger? It must, or else why would he make me play? I need to stop him. Need to get back control of my limbs and my fiddle. But no matter how hard I try to rip myself from his control, I can't break free. I am 12 years old again. A phantom hand at my throat. My body turned traitor against me. Only this time it's not a dream. If I could scream, I could banish him. Send him hurtling back into the darkness he oozed out of. But my voice is locked up tight. So this fiddle's the only voice I have. And now it's his weapon instead of mine. Tears burn at the corner of my eyes. The only outward sign of my struggle against the Shadow Man. Cedar's still beside me, pulling at my arm. But he seems as distant as if he's in another house, on another block. He yells, but I can't hear him. It's just me and my fiddle facing down the darkness. And I'm not ready. I'm not prepared.
Play,
the Shadow Man says.
Play.
As if my hands aren't mine anymore. I dive into the Twa Sisters, the song that started this whole business. The song that drew me into the woods and made me find this fiddle. Anguish and sorrow and regret flow from my strings. I thought nothing could be worse than lying on my back in bed, helpless against the hideous shadows hovering overhead. But this is worse. To see the music that belonged to Daddy put in service of this monster. To see Daddy's fiddle twisted to its evil purpose. I glare at the shadow man, my nostrils flaring, my jaw clenched. But he only laughs. And then he swirls around me, making the whole world go dark. My mind fills with fear, until every terror I've ever had is pressed inside, one against and atop the other. And my breath comes short, and sweat coats every inch of me, even though I'm freezing. But I can't stop playing. Now, Anna Lee pours from the fiddle, beautiful and haunting. While I make music, the Shadow Man makes nightmares. The worst dreams in my memory. The ones that left me gasping, cold and shivering in my bed. Play over and over in my mind. The wasps chasing me down the stairs, their stingers like fire. The dog leaping at my face. The old man in the jogging suit choking me across a fence on a dusty road. The little dead girl in my ceiling, gazing down at me with a face I can't see. Her white dress billowing around her legs. Being sucked into the Atlantic undertow and drowned. And of course, the alligators. Then my nightmares shift, mixing horribly with my daytime terrors. Daddy's coffin. Jesse's rages. Mama's blank, tired face. Sarah turning her back on me forever. The dreams and the fears merge, forming nightmares my subconscious could never have dreamed up. Horrible, grotesque images flit behind my eyes, fast and merciless, seemingly endless. Fear fills my whole being until there's nothing left. And the Shadow Man grows and grows, spreading through the room, gaining substance and power from my fear. Wings brush the walls and flutter fitfully in my hair. Stingers scrape against my skin, leaving burning trails. I should pass out from pure terror and exhaustion. I should fall into darkness and disappear. But I can't. The music has me rooted to the spot. I don't know how many songs I've played, how long this has gone on. I'm surrounded by my own terrors, my nightmares made flesh. But I'm already awake, so there's no hope of rescue. He will keep me here until I die. That's what he wants from me. I see that now. All along, he's been trying to kill me. He couldn't kill me in my dreams, so he used the fiddle to lure me into danger. He's greedy for my death, but I don't know why. When a banjo starts playing, I think it's another nightmare come to get me. A dream I must have forgotten about in the crowd of lurking monsters. At first, it's faint as my breath, like it's coming from another room in the house. But then it gets louder, more insistent, demanding to be heard. Soon, the banjo's tempo matches mine. But where my music feels forced, drawn out of me like blood from a vein, this music is alive in the way only bluegrass can be. The notes bright as sunshine. Sarah. As the music fills the room, overpowering my fiddle, slices of moonlight break through the darkness, like sunlight between the slats of a blind. I catch glimpses of Sarah, sitting cross-legged across from me with the head of the banjo resting in her lap, hair flopping over her eyes, bare fingers dancing over the strings. My heart gives a rebellious thump against the Shadow Man's prison walls. As if she hears it, Sarah looks up and locks eyes with me. Her eyes seem black and glittering and powerful. Normally, Sarah breaks eye contact after a few seconds, but now she's staring into me, like she's searching inside my body for the real Shady, shackled up somewhere inside this automaton playing a fiddle. Her eyes are worried, but filled with something I haven't seen there before. Excitement? Triumph? I don't know. They shine out at me, and all I can think is that I have no idea who she is or what she might become. But I'm certain the darkness is no match for her. And then she starts singing. Sarah Wolfe is singing. She doesn't have an amazing voice, but it's hers, and she's using it. I feel the darkness breaking up around me, like a tree's being pulled up by its roots in a storm, and the darkness is breaking away into clumps, crumbling into nothing. A guitar joins her, and then two other voices, Cedar and Orlando. I didn't even realize I was playing it, but they're all singing Shady Grove. As the words wrap around me, I feel my daddy's presence here too. All the love he had for me pressed into these syllables and notes. The Shadow Man snarls and clutches at me, but his fingers are only vapor when they touch my skin. His strength is almost gone. He lets out a frustrated roar and falls back, shrinking to his usual shape. Moonlight floods the room again. Finally, unbelievably, my fingers stop moving, and the fiddle falls into my lap. Mute for the first time in what feels like a million years. It must have been hours, if Cedar had time to get Sarah and Orlando here. The Shadow Man swirls away, like water down a drain, back into the hole my music made. And then there's Sarah, her banjo, her voice, her eyes. The whole world, all the worlds, narrow to a girl-shaped form made of bluegrass. She finishes the song with a flourish and holds my gaze. I can't look away. Not because I'm trapped again, but because my heart won't let me. I feel like I've been born again. Like I finally know what my Baptist relatives are always going on about. I've been saved by a girl with a banjo, baptized in her song. And then she's holding me, so close I can feel her heartbeat against my own skin. She has her arms wrapped around me like she just rescued me from the edge of a cliff, and she's afraid if she lets go, I'll plunge down into the abyss, which maybe isn't that far from the truth. So I cling to her too, burying my face in her neck. I'm shaking, my whole body racked with chills. Sarah chafes my arms, as if to warm me with her own energy. "It's all right," she murmurs into my hair. "It's all right." Finally, she pulls back and looks at me, studies my face, my shoulders, my arms. She gasps when she turns over my left hand. My fingertips are dripping blood. The Shadow Man's hold made me rip right through my calluses. "Oh, Shady," she whispers.
"I'll go get my truck,"
Cedar says, running from the room. Orlando kneels beside me, fear and worry in his eyes.
"Let's get you home,"
he says. And his voice is the gentle one I know. Not the hard, brittle one he's been using all week. When Cedar gets back, he and Sarah lift me to my feet. Cedar pulls me to his side and helps me down the stairs and out of the house, taking half my weight. He settles me into the cab and goes around to his side, talking to Orlando. I turn to Sarah, who lingers beside my open door. I thought you'd never talk to me again.
I would have come if you'd asked,
Sarah says gently. I'll always come. She looks like she's daring anyone to say otherwise. She means it. Sarah holds my gaze, but I can't tell what she's feeling. Her eyes search mine. Finally, she says, "I forgive you for what happened at my house." And she lowers her voice so only I can hear. "And for Cedar, he's a really good guy." I stare at her. It sounds like she's given me her blessing to be with Cedar. Does she think I want her to hand me over to him? I need to make her see how much I still feel for her. That even though I like Cedar, she's the one I want. The one I've always wanted. I probably shouldn't be thinking about my love life after what just happened. Actually, no, I should. The Shadow Man feeds on my grief and my fear. But he can't touch what I feel for Sarah. She just proved that to all of us. "About Cedar," I say, but she cuts me off. "Not tonight. You've been through enough. We'll talk tomorrow, okay?" She turns away and calls for Orlando to follow her. Frustration and disappointment fill my chest as I watch her walk away. I almost call after her, but what's the point? After how she fought for me against the Shadow Man, how she clung to me once he was gone, I thought this was going to be another chance for her and me. But just like that, the brief opening is gone. Vanished. My mind spins and sputters like tires stuck in mud. Cedar climbs in next to me and starts to drive. He's so still, tense and silent. After everything I put him through tonight, at least he didn't overhear the exchange Sarah and I just had. At least, I don't think he did. I can't think too hard about it. Exhaustion hits. And all I can do is gaze out the window at the construction site. It looks forlorn, half-formed. Not a place anyone would want to die or haunt. I almost feel bad for whoever moves in here. Their brand new house will already be haunted. "Bye, Jim," I whisper as we pull away and speed into the humid Florida night. Cedar doesn't say anything about Jim or the Shadow Man. He grips the steering wheel even harder than he did on the ride over, darting worried glances at me every few minutes the entire ride home. When we near my home, I don't ask him to drop me at the end of the road like the last two times he's driven me. I don't think he would anyway. But when we pull up to the trailer, I wince as the headlights hit the siding, more out of habit than any real embarrassment.
Going up against an evil darkness that wants to trap you inside every nightmare you've ever had has a way of putting things in perspective. Cedar's eyes glance over the trailer, but he doesn't look surprised, or dismayed, or resigned. It's like he doesn't see it. He jumps out of the truck and comes around to my side, helping me down from the cab. I'm weak and aching and hollow feeling. When he pulls me into a tight hug, I rest into his chest, laying my head against his neck and breathing in the salt sweat smell of him. I wish he could come inside and spend the night. I'm afraid to go to sleep. But he helps me to the trailer steps, kisses my forehead, and starts toward his truck. "Thank you," I say, and he turns back around. "Thank you for helping me, for coming with me, and for calling for Sarah and Orlando, for keeping me safe. If y'all hadn't come, the thought is too horrible to finish." Cedar looks troubled and exhausted in the glare from the front porch light, but it gives me a small smile.
"You're welcome, Shady. I'm just glad you're all right."
"What did you see? Well, it was happening. Well, he was hurting me?" I ask. Cedar shakes his head.
"Not much. Mostly shadows moving around. But you were frozen and you looked so scared. And I could feel him. His darkness. His evil."
Cedar shivers.
"I can't imagine what you went through."
He takes a few steps toward me and cups my cheek.
"Get some rest,"
he says. He kisses me lightly on the lips, and then watches me thoughtfully as I unlock the door and disappear inside. Mama has been waiting up for me, so I don't have a chance to hide the state I'm in. She takes one look at me and sends me to bed, saying we'll deal with it tomorrow. The sight of her face sends a stab of anger to my stomach. After everything else Jim said, their affair should hardly matter. But what if it matters more than all the rest? It seems to be the main cause of the rift between Jim and Jesse, the thing that led to their troubled relationship. I still don't think Jesse killed Jim, but all that anger he held against Jim is what led us here. It's why Jesse was the primary suspect, why he's sitting in jail right now. I can't help but wonder how different things would be if the affair had never happened at all. But I'm too tired to think through it all tonight. I go to the bathroom to bandage my fingers, wincing each time the fabric touches my skin. When I drag myself to the bedroom, Honey's in my bed, curled like a little bean at the edge of the mattress. I lie beside her and listen to her breathe, trying not to fall asleep, trying not to think about everything that happened, trying not to think about the Shadow Man, trying not to think about how I failed. Because what's even worse than the Shadow Man's attack is what happened before, or rather what didn't happen. I didn't find the answers to Jesse's freedom or gain any real clues to help prove his innocence. I only unearthed more questions. 21. I wake to pain. My shoulders, my arms, the tips of my fingers, my back, my neck. I don't think there's a part of my body that doesn't hurt. But it's my insides that suffered the most damage last night. Everything Jim said, and then all the Shadow Man put me through, it all pulls at me. I don't know what to think
what to do. I'm never going to be the sort of person who lets life happen to her, who coasts along with events, accepting what comes. But today I want to be. I lie in bed and stare at the ceiling, pretending its pebbled white surface is an early morning beach, the sand fresh from the receding tide, unmarred by feet or tires. Today waits for me like that flawless stretch of sand, untouched by my decisions or mistakes. If I stay in bed, it can remain perfect, a clean plane of possibility. But then I hear Mama rattling around in the kitchen, talking in a low voice to Honey, who is singing the alphabet song in between bites of her breakfast. So I drag myself out of bed and kick the imaginary sand under my feet. If I don't get out there, Jesse will be stuck in prison forever. I might not be much, but I'm all he's got. Mama, I want to visit Jesse, I say, once I work up the courage to enter the kitchen. Why haven't we been yet? I know why I haven't asked before. Because I've been afraid he'd see the doubt on my face, or that he'd give me even more reason to lose my trust in him. But why has Mama stayed away? She blinks at me tiredly from behind a steaming mug of coffee. She's still wearing her fluffy blue robe. He said he didn't want to see me. And now I know why. He's been angry at her all this time about her affair with Jim. What would Mama say if she knew I raised Jim's ghost last night? If she knew all he told me? I'm not sure if anything he said about Jesse was true, but I know he wasn't lying about him and Mama. I should probably be mad at her too. But with how tired and grieved and lonely she looks this morning, the thought of her cheating on Daddy only makes me sad. I bet Jesse'll see me. I use my uninjured hand to pinch pieces off a powdered donut on her plate. You can't go alone. I have to be with you. She sets her coffee down and smacks my hand. Quit picking at my breakfast. There's a box on the counter. What about Aunt Ina? I ask, dusting off my fingers. Mama tilts her head and gives me that don't kid yourself look. Your Aunt Ina can't even go to the grocery store. Let me ask her. Is she on the visitors list? No, but we can get her on it. Will you please? All right, Mama says, pushing her bangs off her forehead. Now leave me alone until I have my coffee. And eat some breakfast. You look like hell. I guess she's decided not to ask me about last night. Or maybe she's too tired now, and she'll launch into it once she's caffeinated. I'm not waiting around to find out. I kiss the top of Honey's mussed head and retreat down the hall to do something about my own wild hair. When the bus pulls up to school, I look for Cedar and instead find Sarah. She's leaning against the wall outside the office, one blue high-top Converse flat against the bricks. She's got on a t-shirt from a kid's summer camp, which seriously detracts from her moody expression and crossed arms. I can't help but smile at the sight of her, though it also makes my stomach rumble. She saved me last night. Saved me when no one else could. And that has to mean something. Hey, I say. Cedar will be right back, Sarah says in a rush. Oh, you guys talked? A little, she says, and shrugs. About last night. Thank you for coming, I say, meeting her eyes. Sarah looks tired and worried. But whatever stronger emotion I saw in her last night,
is gone today.
I'll always...
Come, she says haltingly. The promise doesn't sound as fervent as it did last night, but I can tell she means it. You're my best friend. Her best friend. I should be grateful to have her as a friend at all, but it's hard to let go of what we might have been. If things had been different, even with the weight of the Shadow Man dragging me down, my fear for Jesse, all of it, knowing I'm losing Sarah still manages to feel like a punch to the gut. Then Cedar comes around the corner, followed by Rose and Orlando and Kenneth. My stepbrother, feeling awkward about seeing him after raising Jim's ghost, and more uncertain than ever if I can trust him. I wonder if Cedar told him what happened last night. Orlando bumps his shoulder against mine. A simple touch, that means all is forgiven. Rose is scowling, but I wouldn't expect anything different. She stands next to Sarah and says something to her, but Sarah steps away and looks at the ground. Cedar slips an arm around my waist and smiles at me.
Hey, you all right?
I look from him to Sarah and then to the others. I'm fine. Why is everyone here? Rose rolls her eyes.
For you, dummy. So you don't get yourself killed or lost in hell or whatever the fuck happened last time. You obviously can't handle this ghost crap on your own.
But I already raised Jim's ghost. I already talked to him, I say, glancing at Kenneth. I expect to see fear and guilt in his eyes, but he only looks uncomfortable. He crosses his arms and clears his throat.
Cedar already filled me in, he says. Maybe I should have gone. But I...
Sarah, of all people, puts a hand on Kenneth's arm.
Trust me, Kenneth. You're better off leaving things as they are. It's not like you think it would be.
But I'm still upset at Kenneth for lying all this time. And he also hasn't done anything to convince me he shouldn't be a suspect, too. So I don't really care how he feels about it. Maybe I'm being unreasonable. Maybe it wouldn't have made a difference if he'd told the truth. But it would have been something. It would have been the right thing to do. I was just trying to get information to help Jesse. That's the only reason I did it.
And?
Kenneth says, his voice expectant.
What did Dad say?
Everyone's staring at me, waiting for an answer. But I'm not sure what the answer is. Jim, he wasn't really clear. I don't think he wanted to tell me the truth. Cedar cocks his head at me, like he took away very different information from Jim last night. I can't tell if Kenneth is relieved or disappointed.
You could bring him back again,
he says, his voice wavering,
to ask him more when he's ready.
Is Kenneth bluffing now? Trying to make himself seem less afraid of being accused? I don't think he'll come. He's not interested in helping me. Sarah's voice catches my attention. Do ghosts have a choice? Can they choose not to come? She asks. Her voice throaty, heavy. I know she's thinking about her mom. I nod. Some of them can, especially the ones who have been around a while. Daddy said the fiddle just sort of opens a door, and ghosts have to decide whether to walk through it. Sarah's eyes go bright with tears she won't let spill. And she looks away, toward the PE fields. A bell rings,
and Orlando looks at his watch. We should get to class. But instead of going, he turns to Cedar. What's the plan?
Let's meet and play tonight,
Cedar says to the group.
7 o'clock.
Why? I ask. I already...
Just bring your regular fiddle this time,
Rose interrupts. Cedar smiles at me.
We're your band. We want to support you. Make sure you're okay. A band practice will be a good chance for us all to talk.
I look to Sarah, and she nods.
We can't play at my place, though,
she says hurriedly, crossing her arms again. I don't know that I can play again after what the Shadow Man did to me. But I offer up Aunt Ina's house for the meeting. I can call her after school to make sure she doesn't mind. But she'll probably be thrilled to meet my friends. Besides, I need to talk to her. After she helped me, she deserves to know what happened. And I want to be in the place I feel closest to Daddy. After last night, I'm longing to hear his voice again. As the others file away, I pull Kenneth to one side. Hey, I say.
Yeah?
He glances at me with nervous, wary eyes. His face is built for honesty. Wide and freckled, with that shock of red hair. But he said himself that people aren't ever who we think they are. Maybe he's not either. I still can't help but wonder if his resentment of Jim finally broke open on his daddy's head. If he's not speaking up for Jesse because he's the guilty one. And yet he's not acting like someone who's guilty. I search his face for the truth, but I don't see anything except sadness and weariness. The only person acting guilty is Frank, I realize. Drinking alone in the place Jim died? Railing into the night? The thought pushes whatever I had planned to say to Kenneth from my mind. Instead, I ask about Frank. Before I raised Jim's ghost last night, I saw your Uncle Frank there at the construction site. It was midnight, and he was drunk and yelling at no one. Do you think maybe he might be... Kenneth recoils, his pale skin flushing red.
Now you think Uncle Frank killed my daddy? What the hell, Shady?
Before I can respond, Kenneth shakes his head and stalks away. But then he turns at the last second.
You know, Uncle Frank has always talked to me a lot about forgiveness. He was always telling me I needed to forgive Dad for not being there for me. That I should give him another chance. Uncle Frank said he forgave Dad even though he was the reason their daddy died. Did you know that? My dad was supposed to watch Granddaddy when he was so sick, and instead, Dad took off to buy a bottle of Jack. And Granddaddy died. But Uncle Frank forgave him and gave him work. No matter how bad Dad treated him, and he made sure I was always taken care of. Uncle Frank's a good man. You could take a page from his book.
I wasn't accusing Frank. I just thought you should know how he was that night, so you could check on him. My cheeks flush with the lie.
Yeah, right.
Kenneth says.
You gonna accuse me next?
I square my shoulders. Why shouldn't I? Kenneth's mouth twists.
You're not the person I thought you were, Shady.
He spins on his heel, and I practically sink to the ground under the weight of his anger. Under the weight of my own shame. Maybe he's right. And I'm just looking for anyone to blame. Anyone except Jesse.
I thought getting the fiddle would solve all the mysteries and make clear all the secrets. But instead, it's like a letter opener sliding under an envelope's flap. I'm half afraid to know what's going to come springing out of the unsealed paper. I still don't know who killed Jim or why, but I'm more unsure of Jesse than ever. And nowhere feels safe. Not the woods, not Mama's trailer, not even my dreams. Aunt Ina's house feels like my last refuge. I get to Aunt Ina's half an hour early, and before I've even turned off the engine, the knot of anxiety in my belly starts to loosen. The house looks bigger than usual in the deepening twilight, the azaleas faintly glowing in the gloom of the oaks and hanging moss. No one passing by would see safe refuge here. But as I walk up the steps, my protective walls fall down, one by one. When Aunt Ina pulls me into a hug, I finally let go of the burden of unshed tears I've been carrying around since last night. Ina holds me and croons into my hair, the way I do for honey when she's sad. After I've gotten all the tears out, I tell her everything about raising Jim, what he said, the Shadow Man, Sarah's rescue. Her eyes light up when I talk about Sarah, but I quickly change the subject to what I came here to ask. Will you take me to visit Jesse on Saturday? To the jail? She leans back. Why? The juvenile detention center. It's just teenagers there, I say. I need to talk to Jesse. To find out if all the stuff Jim said about him is, if there's any truth in it. Look, I was wrong to use the fiddle. I see that now. I should have tried to talk to Jesse first, to see if I could get him to tell me what happened. That's what I want to do now. I don't know, Shady. Please, Aunt Ina. I know it will be hard for you. But he won't see Mama. And anyway, I wouldn't want her to hear what we talk about. It's important. Please. Aunt Ina's eyes fill with dread, but she nods. All right. Thank you, I say, wiping away the last of my tears. And thank you for letting us play here tonight. I know it was short notice. Aunt Ina waves away my thanks.
You know this is still your home. You can always bring your friends here.
But are you going to play again? So soon?
Look at the state of your hand.
My fingers are covered in Honey's cartoon-themed band-aids, which will make it hard to play. But more importantly, I'm not sure I'm ready to pick up even my ordinary fiddle again. Not after last night. Not after my encounter with the cold, insatiable Shadow Man. But I know I need to be here, in this house full of familiar ghosts. I'll be all right, I say. But Aunt Ina doesn't look convinced. Cedar and Rose are the first to arrive. And Cedar laces his fingers in mine almost as soon as he's in the door. Aunt Ina raises her eyebrows at me, and I shoot her a look worthy of my mama.
This house is a fucking nightmare,
Rose says before she notices Aunt Ina. This is the most haunted-looking place in the whole goddamn South. Cedar clears his throat, and Rose says,
Oh, sorry, I...
Aunt Ina laughs.
It is haunted. Very haunted. But I like it here.
Rose's eyes widen with appreciation, and she disappears on a tour with Aunt Ina before I've even introduced them. Now that I'm alone with Cedar,
I pull him into the living room, onto an ancient couch. He doesn't let go of my hand, and his other one is already caressing my face, stroking my hair. His thumb settles into one corner of my mouth, which draws my eyes up to his.
"There she is,"
he whispers.
"My Shady Grove. I was so scared for you last night."
At his words, I feel the Shadow Man's hideous presence again. So I push myself closer to Cedar. God, his eyes are so green. His lashes so black. I want to swim in those eyes, bathe in them, stay there, away from all the troubles of my life. I lean forward and kiss him, breathing in the smell of him. When I pull back, he smiles sleepily, like I'm a drug sending him off to his dreams. He says. Someone knocks at the front door, and I reluctantly get up to answer it. Sarah and Orlando stand on the porch in the twilight. Orlando is mesmerized by a brownish-colored moth fluttering around the porch light, but Sarah finds my eyes right away. "My valiant rescuer," I say in an attempt at a joke. She quirks her lips into a shape that could almost be called a smile, then turns to Orlando. "Come on. You can bring the moth if you want," she says, pulling him by the arm.
"It's a tulip tree beauty,"
he says. "Quite common." But all the same, he cups his hands around it, drawing it away from the light. He carries it inside, and Sarah picks up the guitar he left, shaking her head with an indulgent smile. We all settle down together in the living room. Cedar and I on the couch, Rose, now returned from her ghost tour, in an overstuffed chair, Sarah and Orlando on the floor. Aunt Ina is in the kitchen, pretending to bake, but probably just eavesdropping. Rose pulls out her little banjo and starts an idle sort of alternating roll, her fingers dancing over the strings. No one speaks.
"Well,"
Cedar finally says. But then there's another knock on the door. Rose sighs dramatically, rising to her feet.
"Will that bastard ever be on time?"
When Rose walks by her to get the door, Sarah starts shifting her weight around, crossing and uncrossing her arms. Just being in the same room with Rose makes Sarah fragile as an autumn leaf. I leave Cedar's side and sit next to her on the floor, my shoulder close but not touching hers. Orlando is on her other side, watching the moth traverse the back of his hand. I don't see Kenneth until he plops down in my place next to Cedar, looks around at everyone except me, and says,
"Well, this looks fun. Who needs ghosts when you guys can make a room feel so dead?"
No one laughs, except Aunt Ina from the kitchen. Why did he even come here? He must hate me now. What's he trying to prove? Maybe he just wants to hear exactly what his father said. I can't blame him for that.
"Anyway,"
Cedar begins,
"we're here because Shady raised her stepdad's ghost last night and it didn't go well."
He settles worried eyes on me, waiting.
"I think you should tell us what happened."
"She doesn't have to tell us anything she doesn't want to," Sarah says. "It's her business. You can always count on Sarah to be the defender of privacy." "It stopped being her business when she dragged us all into this shit," Rose says, turning her scowl squarely on me. I don't know why Rose is here either. It's not for my sake. Maybe for Cedar's. Or maybe Sarah's. She is clearly no fan of mine.
Spill, Shady. Now.
Orlando looks up from the moth and smiles at Rose like she's some rare butterfly that's floated in from South America. She sees him looking at her and spits out,
"Forget it, dude. You're not my type."
Her eyes flit to Sarah, and instinctively, I move a little closer to her. Cedar follows the movement with his eyes, his brow furrowed.
This is not going well. Fine. Here's what happened.
I launch into the events of last night, trying to repeat Jim's words exactly as he spoke them. I'm doing all right, until I get to the Shadow Man, and then my breath starts to feel tight and I can't go on. Oddly, it's Kenneth who jumps in, although his words aren't comforting.
Shady, I know you don't want to believe Jesse did it, but you just told us Dad said it was him.
He stares at me, certain now that Jesse's guilty. I guess his anger at me has made him sure. Not really, though, I say. Jim wouldn't tell me the whole truth. He kept talking in riddles. I don't think he wants me to know what really happened. He said it was Jesse's fault he's dead, but he didn't actually say Jesse killed him. Kenneth shakes his head.
Dad was always straightforward. That was like his one good quality. You always knew where he stood.
Did you know he slept with my mama before my daddy died? Is that straightforward? I shoot back. Rose's mouth drops open, and Orlando looks like he wants to climb under a rock and never come back out again. Kenneth flushes.
Yeah, I knew,
he says.
I thought you knew too. Jesse did.
I guess I was the only one of us naive enough to believe our parents.
Jesse was really touchy about it. That's why he beat the shit out of me at the open mic. I said something about that.
So you all think Jesse did it then? I ask, gazing around the room. Everyone shifts uncomfortably. Dread pools in my stomach.
Shady,
Cedar says, his voice gentle.
We're all on your side. You know that.
But Rose cuts across his reassurance.
Have you considered that maybe your brother doesn't want you to save him? That maybe it's better if you stay out of it?
Rose,
Cedar says, his eyebrows raised in warning. Honestly, I don't care what Jesse wants, I say. I'm not going to leave him in jail. No matter what Jim said Jesse did.
You're not going to try to raise Jim's ghosts again, are you?
Orlando asks, unable to keep the disapproval from his voice. I shake my head. That's the only thing I'm sure of. I'm going to visit Jesse on Saturday, and I'll see if I can get anything out of him. That's all I know to do now. I slump forward and hide my face in my hands. I didn't want to be alone in this. But maybe having everyone involved isn't helping either. Maybe Rose is right, and I can't help Jesse. Maybe Jesse has to help himself. That's what I have to make him do tomorrow. Why don't we play? Orlando says. For fun, I mean. That's kind of what bands do, right?
Great idea,
Cedar says, already lifting the clasps on his mandolin case.
It will do us all good.
Everyone else starts pulling out instruments and tuning them. The room fills with discordant, intermittent music that actually makes me want to play, to be a part of it. I put one hand on my old pawn shop case, and my fingertips throb. I lift each latch slowly, carefully, Even though I brought my ordinary fiddle, it feels like a snake, waiting to sink its fangs into me. I pull it out and bring it up to my chin. But the moment I touch the bow to the strings, the room starts to spin. Black dots pinprick my vision, and my chest feels tight. I put the fiddle back in its case and close the lid on it. I can't.
We won't let the Shadow Man get you,
Kenneth says, a nasty sarcasm lacing his voice.
Shut up, Ken.
Shady, you don't have to play tonight,
Cedar says.
Come here and sit by me. We'll play and you sing. Or just listen.
His eyes are tender, protective. I nod and go back to his side, and he pushes Kenneth off the couch. I settle into Cedar's warmth and closeness, glad to leave the fiddle on the other side of the room. Sarah's looking at me, worry in her eyes, and something else. Jealousy, maybe. Resignation. I don't know, and I don't want to think about it. I lay my head against Cedar's shoulder, accepting the shelter he's offering. They start playing Wildwood Flower, and I can feel the ripples of Cedar's muscles against my face as he plays. As I breathe in the smell of his deodorant and laundry detergent, the black at the edges of my vision recedes. My chest loosens up again.
Orlando, will you teach us some Cuban country?
Cedar asks once they finish the song. Orlando grins and launches into one of his favorite songs by the Buena Vista Social Club. He plays smoothly, showing off his finger work with tremolos. No one understands the words since they're in Spanish, but everyone is tapping their feet and clapping. Kenneth starts trying to sing along, and they all laugh. I wish I could join in. Wish I could share their joy tonight. But I feel unmoored, set adrift on an unfamiliar sea. So I lean back against the couch and close my eyes, letting their music and their laughter wash over me. I won't worry about the Shadow Man tonight. He can't possibly slip into all this noise and joy. I wake to silence and the warmth of a blanket. Everyone except Cedar's gone. He's laid out on the couch with me, his back pressed against me. Our warmth making the blanket like a nest I never want to leave. I put one arm over his side, and he grasps my hand, bringing it up to rest on his chest. How long was I asleep? I ask. Hoping he's not about to tell me I was snoring.
An hour or so. Everybody packed up and left 20 minutes ago. I guess your aunt went up to bed. I thought you needed some sleep.
He thought right.
I say through a yawn and snuggle against his neck. He's quiet so long I think he's fallen back asleep. But then he speaks again, his voice wavering.
Shady, I feel like a jerk even bringing this up right now, but what's between you and Sarah? Do you still have feelings for her? Rose says you do, and it seems like she's right.
Fucking Rose. I sigh. I don't know. She's my best friend, except for Orlando. I guess, yeah. I do have some of those feelings. And maybe she does too, but...
But what?
But Sarah's so closed off. She won't let anybody get near her. Just when I think there's an opening, it's gone again. That fast.
So you're settling for me?
He asks, with more than a little hurt in his voice.
It's not like that.
It feels like it.
I like you, I say. I like spending time with you. You make me happy.
I'm afraid you're going to change your mind,
Cedar says.
I'm afraid I'm going to get attached. And then you're going to decide you'd rather be with Sarah.
I don't know what to say to that. I can't promise I won't change my mind. But right now, I'm tired of talking about Sarah. Tired of everything except the warmth of Cedar's body. The nearness and safety and goodness of him. I pull his arm, making him turn over to face me. He looks tousled and sleepy. Unbearably lovely. I put my hand against his face. Run my fingers through his hair and curl them at the nape of his neck. He closes his eyes and purrs like a cat. I laugh. But then I'm kissing him. Kissing him like he's the sun and I've got a whole world of darkness that needs lighting. We kiss until we're gasping and our hands are wandering of their own volition. I hope to hell my daddy's ghost isn't here to see this. Cedar finally pulls back, his pupils enormous, his lips red and slightly puffy from my kisses.
Wait,
he says, breathing hard.
You didn't answer. Are you just killing time with me until Sarah decides she wants you?
It's not like that. I care about you, I say. I like being with you. Cedar's quiet until his phone buzzes in his pocket. He pulls it out and squints at the screen.
I gotta go home.
He gets up, untangling his limbs from mine, fighting his way out of the twisted blanket. Don't go, I say, making to get up. But he has already turned away from me. Cedar! He turns back around, his face half longing and half anger.
Just make up your mind. And don't take too long. I'm not waiting around forever.
He's out the door before I can say anything else. The heat of his kisses still on my lips. I shouldn't have let him go. When the door closes, I hear Aunt Ina's footsteps on the stairs.
What the hell is that all about?
She calls down.
I thought you liked girls.
I do, I say. And I like boys too. You knew that. I guess I was hoping you'd swear off the boys, Aunt Ina says. Girls are a lot less trouble. She's got that dead wrong. But I don't want to talk about it. Any other time, this push and pull between Cedar and Sarah would take up all my headspace. But right now, with everything else going on, it's just a distraction from what matters. It's just one more hurt in a parade of hurts. Aunt Ina seems to sense it, too.
You worried about seeing Jesse?
All I can do is not. She finally comes downstairs and sits under the blanket with me. She's wearing pajamas printed with yellow stars and crescent moons.
I know, darling. Jesse's so much like William. I spent half my life worrying about your daddy.
If they were so alike, why did they fight so much?
They both love too deeply. Feel too much.
Doesn't sound like a bad thing. She gazes at me.
Shady, the way you love people is sweet and open-hearted and easy. But love's not like that for everybody. Some people love until it hurts. Until it's more pain than anything else. That's how William was. And that's how Jesse is, too. That kind of love can break a person in half. I sigh. Maybe she's right. And I do love easy. But lately it feels like my love for Jesse won't only break me. It might also get me killed.
22. I'm getting ready to go pick up Anina for our trip to see Jesse when my cell phone rings. It's a local number I don't recognize, so I ignore it, sending the call to voicemail. Several minutes go by, and I think it must have been a wrong number or a scam, but then the voicemail notification dings. No one leaves voicemails anymore, so I'm curious enough to listen. A man's rumbling voice plays in my ear.
Shady, this is Frank Cooper. I'm calling to talk to you about what you said to Kenneth, though maybe it's better I got your voicemail. Because I need to talk and you need to listen.
His voice sounds so authoritative, I automatically stand up straighter. This isn't the angry man from Jim's funeral, or the gentleman who came to my door to apologize, or the drunk man screaming into the empty night. This is Frank, the boss. Frank, who could run for local office and win by a landslide. This is the Frank Jim despised.
Kenneth lost his father, and he is grieving. How dare you accuse him of killing his own daddy? How dare you imply that he is anything but a victim in this crime? How dare you, Shady Grove?
My cheeks begin to burn with shame.
I always thought you were a good girl, better than the stock you came from. I know you can't help your breeding. But you can choose how to behave in the world. You can choose to accept the truth and move forward. But this, accusing an innocent boy, threatening him, implying that anyone except your sorry brother had anything to do with Jim's death, it's disgusting.
Now my cheeks burn for a different reason. A white-hot rage licks at my insides as Frank speaks on.
You will drop this nonsense right now, or I swear to God I will go after Jesse even harder than I already am. I will not rest until he gets life in prison. I will make him a roach beneath my boot, and I will squish his guts into the ground. So unless you're ready to see that happen, unless you're willing to do that to your brother, you'll leave my nephew alone. You'll stop sticking your nose where it doesn't belong. You'll stay at home like a good girl and try to make something better of yourself than the rest of your family ever did.
He goes on, lecturing me about his family name and his power in the community, the weight and influence he wields. With every word, I squeeze my phone a little tighter. Oh, my shame gone. He doesn't ever say the words trailer trash, but they are implied in every syllable he speaks. He thinks my family is nothing, is garbage, is weak. He thinks we will lie still while he destroys us. Well, he's wrong about that. Frank is still talking when I press the end button with shaking hands and save his message on my phone. He meant to intimidate me, but all he's done is light a fire under my feet. The Frank I know, the Frank this town knows, would never speak to a teenage girl like that. He's showing a side of himself only Jim seemed to know about, and that means he's got something to lose. Anger keeps me going all morning, until Aunt Ina and I pull up to the juvenile detention center.